in somewhere, and I don't know where, we had in the pamphlet, which I haven't got. He said that no book had influenced him so much as The Disinherited Family.
It's a very good book, isn't it?
And he, as you know, did it in School of Economics, and I don't know whether it's still done or not.
But your job, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would it be right to say that you were there to tidy up Eleanor, really?
Were
you
more than that, because Eleanor wanted to be shut at family allowances, except purely as a director. I was there to propagate family allowances any way I could. And it was, you know, they didn't go bullheaded at things. They sort of, if they saw an opening, they took it.
So you were looking for openings?
Yeah, I was looking for openings for family allowance. And of course, it was a time of increasing financial stringency. And
so how would you spend your day when you were first there then? What would you do? You'd come in, what, at 10 in the morning, would you? And
Hopper's 9 or 10, yes. Nine.
And what would you do, really? You'd answer, you'd deal with the correspondence. Would you see Eleanor at a fixed time of day?
Oh, no, we saw Eleanor sort of once. I usually asked to see Eleanor. Of course, her house was very near.
You just go around then, take some letters.
Then I keep telling you stories, but it's as little stories I remember. She probably was put up to it by Miss McAdam, but occasionally she sort of realised she ought to do something more, perhaps, about me. And she rang up once. She said, "Miss Green, I think I've got a bit of time. Would you like to come and have tea with me?" So I said, "You want to discuss?" "No, just come and have tea. I thought it would be nice if we'd have tea together." So I go round to Romney Street, and this sort of delicious tea, little, you know, cucumber sandwiches and very nice little cakes, China tea, beautifully set out, everything. And Eleanor looking rather upset. Young Masaryk had just gone. He'd come. And talked a bit, and Eleanor got a bit restive. "Oh, she doesn't want me to stay much longer." Finally, in despair, after I'd been there about 20 minutes, I got up to go. She said, "Oh, my dear child, my dear child, I've forgotten to give you any tea." And then she said too, and I can see her still, "Put jam on the bread and cut it all up for me like a little girl."
But when you say, was she always in a hurry? Was she always in a rush?
Yes. She had an enormous load of work. Really tremendous.
You always felt with her, did you?
I mustn't take up too much time.
Yes. Yeah.
And I didn't. I mean, we were very... Yeah. We didn't waste time chatting. We just got on with it and argued about things. And I mean, I wouldn't... for instance, I wouldn't publish a pamphlet without sending it to her for approval. She was very much... We had a committee, of course, but she was very much the Family Endowment Society, both in the sense that she largely financed it and she was... directed it. Can't remember much about Mrs. Hubbock then.
What was and you decided you where to send the organisers, or was it where they were invited?
Oh well, I had to. It was a sort of cooperative effort between the organiser and they were both said it pretty experienced. And if I wanted to concentrate on the. Say the Labour Party conference was coming on, we wanted to concentrate. Well, that'd be too late, of course, but the year before, probably. We wanted to have a sort of concerted drive on trade unionists. If they'd go to... No, I'm wrong. I think they more or less covered every town in their area. And when they went to the town, they'd see the trade union bosses. They'd go and see, perhaps, if there was a teaching, if we were on about teachers, I'd see about that. If we were, they'd probably go and talk to the town clerk and see if he was at all interested in rent rebates, children's rent rebates. And there's so many openings. And if we've been doing a thing on family allowance in the clergy, for instance, they might find somebody who's interested, who'd, if you've done any of this sort of work, you know, one person immediately sends you to another. And, of course, among women's organisations, and especially among the sort of prominent women who are magistrates or who were prominent politically, an awful lot of them knew Eleanor or knew of Eleanor from the suffrage. There was a back.
So she had a lot of contacts ready to use?
Yes, I don't know. I don't mean that she naturally could refer you to somebody in Leeds, but somebody in Leeds, Eleanor Rathbone. I went with Miss Hardman once to South Wales in the worst of the Depression, and we couldn't get any addresses or any information at all from the council, what was it, Council of Social Service, Charity Organisation Society or something in London. Nothing at all. And we just went down to the Rhondda and walked from one valley to the other. And wherever we went, I mean, you just sort of mentioned the name Eleanor Rathbone. And
these were old suffrage people?
No, the miners.
Miners.
You see, and social workers who knew about Eleanor. She really was
a name,
yes.
But so it seems to me you're doing a double sort of job there. You're being administrator and researcher at the same time.
Yes, and writer.
So you had to edit...
Quite a lot of writing.
Had to edit the Chronicle.
Yes, that wasn't a big
job. Not a big thing.
No, but I tried to get articles in various papers and write leaflets. And
You stayed with the Family Allowance Society then how long for?
Well, for the whole time, but I didn't... the society itself became very inactive.
Did it? What, in the Second World War?
I left in the beginning of the war.
I see, yes.
But with the Depression, I mean, just the idea of spending 70 million, the door closed.
I understand, yes. So really that... You were doing the same job all the way through, really, and what changed was just that there was less of the job to do, in a way.
You then come on to that I had a smaller job, there were less possibilities, and, of course, we had this fall in income. Very difficult to get money.
How'd you get money, even
just
on good
from
days?
Subscribers?
Did you write round to subscribers?
Yes, and it was a yearly subscription, you see. We got money from subscribers, and of course a pretty big lump from Eleanor. I can't remember how much, but you know, it became more of a burden on Eleanor's. Funds dried up.
And you publish an annual report, I suppose, with all this in. I haven't actually read the stuff, so...
No, I haven't got the annual report. It's amazing what I haven't got. I mean, I've only got a few press cuttings and a few leaflets that we produced then. But then, you then go to the National Union. Now, as far as I know, this was Mrs... It may not have been Mrs. Hubbock's idea, but she...
She ran it.
She masterminded the thing, which was... she followed Eleanor as president. And she... I think they both thought it out and discussed it between them and with the other National Union women. They were a very capable committee there. And decided that... They got all these old suffrage societies still going, and they were getting new ones. Mrs. Horton was secretary.
See her, actually,
oh, are you?
Much time, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Tell her you've seen me.
I will. Yes.
Yes. We didn't know each other at all well. But Mrs. Horton was secretary. Well, I didn't go into this then, but the outcome of it was they decided that the newer societies and the younger women weren't so keen on the political side. They wanted more social meeting.
Yes.
So they started the town women guilds. And Mrs. Horton left the NU, and I think it was a much, in a way, for a minister, a more exciting job. I mean, it was a new organisation growing up and so on.
Yeah.
But it was less political.
Yeah.
And she went to therefore they didn't know what to do about the National Union. So I then became half-time National Union and half-time Family Allowances.
I see, because the Family Allowance job had contracted,
you
mean?
Yes.
Yes, I see, yes. So you were Secretary of the National Union, or the National Council?
National Council of Equal Citizenship, yes.
Yes, I see. So were you the first Secretary then, Mrs. Seven?
Oh, I suppose I was. I never struck me before.
Yes, I see, yes.
Yeah.
So really, in a sense, the National Council was a sort of I wouldn't say dregs, but...
You mustn't say that. They'll all get up from their graves and smite you. It was a main tree, and it had thrown up a little sapling which outgrew it,
What was it like, and what happened? What was the National Council like? Because you see, I know about the National Union, but I don't know anything about the Council.
Don't you?
So what happened? There were a lot of branches, were there?
Yes, it took the branches more or less decided which they wanted to affiliate to, either National Council, the Townsmen's Guild, and the more politically conscious went to the National Council.
And were they on the whole the older women or the old suffrage people? It was that type of person?
I suppose so.
Yes.
I don't know, I don't remember them being very, sort of middle-aged. And they had an annual meeting at which they had resolutions, largely thought up by the executive committee who knew which direction they wanted to push at any particular time. And of course it was the new feminism, they called it, because when after Millicent Fawcett left, resigned.
Well, she died in 29.
Yes, but she resigned.
Yes, yes.
In 29, did she die?
Yes, she resigned, I think, 27, all that sort of thing.
Yes, well, after she resigned, Eleanor Rathcombe came on and made a real fighting speech and stand about the new feminism, which greatly extended she all along, and Millicent Fawcett, of course, had thought of the vote as what it was, not only a sort of symbol of women's, but what it could do.
Mm.
And Eleanor felt very strongly that family allowances were important in the new feminism, not only because they were a natural accompaniment of equal pay, but also because this was her sort of starting, lost sight of this a little bit in the course of history, but her real starting point was this burning indignation at the fact that married women in the census were classified as unoccupied.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was to get across the conception that a woman's work was just as professional, just as important as a plumber's or a lawyer's. She got her job and she hadn't been given the means of doing it. And the family allowances was not only
it was a thing for the dignity of housewives.
Dignity of women and of course, also equally important, the thing that I was more interested in practice was the fact that it was the only way to ensure at that time, and probably at this time, to ensure that a fair deal for the children, the effect on poverty.
So, did your job in the National Union, or the National Council, shall we call it, did that differ much from your family allowance job, or was it the same sort of thing you were doing?
I suppose it was a more formal organisation, with annual meetings, and I think I may be wrong, but I think I wrote a monthly letter to all the organisations on policies. And there were a lot of points of local government things that came up. And
So did you do your work for the council in the same room as it was really?
Yes, and I think I went to Tim's house then, and I think I got a typist.
Did you really?
Yes.
So it was a bigger
yes.
job, really.
Well, it was. It was a much bigger job because I had the two jobs.
Two to one, yes.
And every now and then a bit of something or other for Eleanor
yes.
on the side. Because the family allowances kept ticking over. We had to sort of talk about family allowances and remind people about family allowances. But oh, and I spoke, of course. I did a few meetings.
Did you really?
Yes.
So did you have to work directly under Eva then, as far as the council worked?
Generally, yes. Yes, I think I saw quite a lot of her there.
So
yes.
You go over to Golders
Green? I'd rather take my directions from Eva, yes.
Did you go over to Golders Green then
no,
for that, or did
no,
she come
no,
to you?
No, she wandered in. Yes.
Did she?
Yes, she used to wander in every now and then. But she was had a marvellously organised life. I mean, the things she got in, both of them. And I remember once she had an evening off from Morley. Why, I don't remember. Morley was closed. And she said, Miss Green, I want to go out on the town. And she took me out, and we had a hurried sandwich at Lyons. And I think we went to three shows, which Gracie Fields was one. She just went from place to place, picking what she thought was the best, you see. She got it all in an evening.
What, you mean you went to bits of shows?
Yes.
That's typical of Eva, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What was she like to work for? Was she impatient, quick, difficult, pleasant?
I don't know. I got on awfully well with them
Did
both,
you?
Yes.
Yeah. They weren't different, noticeably different in the ways to work for.
Because Miss Rathbone had this little bit of aloofness.
Mm.
And she sometimes irritated me by regurgitating one of my own pamphlets, which I found very trying indeed. You know, I was working hard and I was impatient. I didn't want to be lectured on something I'd written about a fortnight ago. She was unconscious of that. No, Eva was very good to work for, except this little bit that one was conscious of, that there was this little bit of friction. I remember I sent a letter to the Times, and the first time I lettered the Times and Family Endowment Society, I'd sign. Mm. But I signed one from the National Council, and she was very annoyed.
Mm.
I mean, she hadn't seen it or knew anything about it, but she...
Just because, in principle, everything that's under the name of the council should be seen by her.
Well, no, not that she hadn't seen it, but she hadn't signed it.
Yes,
it was this old business, which... it was a little thing, and it didn't often occur, and perhaps it's stuck quite disproportionately in my mind, but it soured things. Just a little bit, and certainly in retrospect it does, because Eleanor was so much the reverse. I don't know, for some reason or other she was more... I don't know, I think I was shy a bit in the way that Eleanor was, and found it a bit difficult to make human relationships with her.
Were they concerned about your career, your own personal career at all?
No. Well, Eleanor was when she thought of it, yes.
Mm.
But that's what I felt about Mrs. Hubbock, that after all I was working pretty hard for not very much money at some times. I was very well paid to begin with. I ought to be making a name for myself and wasn't.
Because you see, what you say fits in very much with what other people tell me, that because Eva was dedicated to a cause, she expected everybody who was working for her to be as dedicated.
Yes.
You know, and as selfless, in a sense.
Oh, well, I don't think there's any difficulty there, because I was completely convinced about family allowances, that one gets a bit bored at always
running away angry. Yes, but she pushed people on all the time and expect an unreasonable amount of work from
them. I think Eleanor would be the same. I mean, they drove themselves, you know. Yes, I think, you see, I think Eleanor would exploit people without being at all conscious of it.
Yes.
But,
and the same with Eva, you'd say, would you?
Yes, she might not. She might be conscious
of it. She might be conscious of it. Yes, interesting.
But I know there was one stage when things were at a low ebb before I was National Union thing, and I said, I was very concerned about the position of the society and the money, and I remember offering to go on, I don't know, two-thirds or half salary or something, and I moved out I had an adorable landlady in Chelsea, and I moved out into a conservatory where I'd have buckets because things came through the roof. But they, you know, they were a bit reluctant, but they, you know, they took it. And so, well, they didn't have done the same themselves, you see. It didn't occur to me either. I mean, it seemed a natural thing to do. And when things improved, of course.
What about Elizabeth McAdam? Can you describe her to me? Because she's a very shadowy figure. I've never met anybody who knew her.
Oh, she was Eleanor. Of course, one hardly dare to know what words to speak about it now, because in those days you never dreamt of anything of the kind. But now, if you talk about her being more or less a wife to Eleanor, which she was,
they would immediately
think of all sorts of.
Yes, oh, I'm sure there wasn't anything like that.
No.
But I mean, they really were a pair, were they? I mean, really
absolutely
looking after each other.
Absolutely. Well, she just looked after Eleanor as she'd look after her husband.
Did she really?
Yes, and she sort of, you know, saw that she was neat and tidy.
Did she really?
Yes.
Even to that degree of personal attention?
Oh, yes. You're very personal. And this sort of myth that was built up that Eleanor was no good at social relationships and that she was the one, you see. I first met her at some meeting, rather, and she walked home with me. And I remember distinctly her saying, "Would it trouble you very much, Miss Green, just to walk a little slower?" You know, I mean, she didn't sort of ask me, "Oh, you walk a bit too quick for me," but
she was very ladylike, sort of person.
Oh, yes. I think she was quite a bright woman. She'd done all sorts of things. But I came into Miss Hardman after seeing her and said, "My goodness, I've been social worked over." And all Eleanor's friends, Miss Mary Stocks, Eva Hubbock, they used to go to holidays together. And she was, everyone loved Miss McAdam. Miss Hardman, her secretary, the cook, and the housekeeper, and me. We couldn't stand her.
Really so? Yeah. Well, because she was sort of too precious, you mean, or what?
Yes, and interfering, and she had the wrong attitude to people. I mean, she wasn't
fussy.
Yes, fussy, and I don't know, patronising. I don't know what it was, but yes. Eleanor wouldn't think how she treated servants. Eleanor had been used to servants all her life, but I don't think it occurred to her, and she'd just treat them like people. And that's it. But
she was genteel.
Yes. I can stand her.
But as far as
I didn't have very much to do with it. Every now and then she sort of probably said to Eleanor, "Well, really, you ought to do something about Miss Green," you know, that kind of thing.
But you know, there are two partnerships then, aren't there? There's Eva Hubbock and Eleanor, as far as politics is concerned.
Yes, and Mary Stocks to some
Mary
extent.
Stocks,
yes. She wasn't in the suffrage movement, but she was. I think Eleanor regarded her almost as a daughter somehow. She was very fond of her. She was at most, she was a fascinating woman.
Interesting.
Yes.
And then there's another partnership, that is Miss McAdam and Eleanor.
Yes.
Which is a partnership mainly designed presumably to getting Eleanor domestically organized.
Yes, she looked after all the domestic side, and Eleanor insisted that she was her, you know, she was so good socially and was able to deal with people so well. And of course, we then thought she was a complete failure dealing with people, but still. She couldn't deal with young people, obviously.
No, I see. It's probably a generational thing.
Maybe. Mm. But Eleanor and I could talk as equals. Mm. We weren't equals.
No,
neither of us suppose we were. But we
worked well together.
Yes, and worked very well together. And I worked. I think I've given you little grumbles which have sort of grown with time and with reading that book about Eva Hubbard, because we worked well together. And
how did it all end, actually, and why did
then, I don't know, I'm not getting on very fast. Nothing much could happen politically about family allowances. The Labour Party had turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
In favour of provision in kind. The allowances of the children of the unemployed were, I think, 2 shillings a week. When you hear of people talk about poverty now, it's almost sacrilege, blasphemy to me. I mean, there was real poverty.
Mm, no shoes and that sort of thing.
And you could tell. You go out to Harlow now, you can't tell from the children which is who's a working class child and who's a middle class child. Those, you could tell straight away in the streets,
yeah, sure,
the rickety legs.
Yeah,
I mean, this was concerning everybody, this sort of problem of malnutrition. And I had thought, I knew a bit about agriculture and was interested in it. And I followed a bit about the milk marketing board. And they had an enormous problem with surplus milk, which we always claimed was going into umbrella handles and making buttons. But in fact, I think it was absolutely minute.
Yeah.
Still, I believed it at the time. It wasn't just good. And I had the idea, the milk bill was coming up, and I remember, I thought, first of all, of writing to the New Statesman and putting this idea across that this milk should be used to feed children. And then I didn't know whether I could do that sort of independently of my job or if anyone would take much notice of it. And I remember very distinctly walking along with Eva Hubbock and telling her about this scheme. And I was terribly disappointed because she didn't show any interest in it at all. And the next thing I heard was that it had been decided to set up a committee go into the possibilities of this being used.
Mm.
And I went to the milk marketing board. We progressed a certain amount, and I went down as, I suppose, I wasn't all that young. But I think they thought I was pretty young. I saw the, first of all, I saw the general manager, and he arranged for me to see the chairman of Baxter, chairman of marketing board, to put forward a scheme for them to supply the milk to the government at a very low, at the manufacturing price, and the government to buy it and provide it free to a third of the milk a day for school children. And it appealed to them from a publicity point of view, the sort of the product advertising the product. The children probably never taste fresh milk otherwise.
It's an opening, isn't it?
Yes. they hunt and hoard. And Baxter said, well, I'll tell you what, Miss Green, if you can get a publicity campaign going for us, we'll do it. And I said, well, what about a meeting in the House of Commons with MPs from all parties. We'd have it chaired by Macmillan or Boothby or somebody. He said, you couldn't do that, could you? I said, oh, yes, quite easily. And we started, and of course, it wasn't a question of a brilliant organisation or anything. It was a question of coming in on the rising tide.
Yes, there was an opportunity then, yes. Really. Yes.
And in effect, you see, what we discussed, I discussed it with Ellen, and we decided that we weren't going to get cash family allowances, so that we'd concentrate on free meals for free milk for school children, cheap milk for children under five and the expectant mothers, increase of children's allowance under unemployment assistance, unemployment insurance, and extend free meals, only 4% of school meals, only 4% of children in the country have school meals then, under the most appalling condition.
Mm. But was there a formal organisation set up then?
We then got a formal organisation going. The BMA had come out with a report on the standard, the lowest
minimum sort of
minimum standard. Yes. We called it the Children's Minimum Committee
that's,
in the first
that's right,
part.
Yes, yes.
With the minimum food, which Eleanor wanted to live on, and we persuaded her. She thought we could do more useful things if she was properly fed.
She really horror. Seriously did want to.
Oh, yes. Good horror Lord. among the staff. They would have to cook a BMA minimum diet every day. And Miss McCadden didn't fancy it so much. Oh, yes.
Good Lord, that's rather fine in a way, isn't it?
Oh, yes. on that, she was, I don't know, well, she was in her 60s, of course, but she really had to be bullied and persuaded not to do it. But just to go astray a little bit, for the much later on, we're trying to get some money for the Children's Nutrition Council. We decided, well, that the thing that people did was to sort of have a big lunch at the Dorchester or somewhere, and probably perhaps put it in the hands of an agency, you see, and then you charge 5 guineas for tickets and lunch only costs 3 and so on. And we talked about this. Now that I can remember. Eleanor said, oh, she sort of shuffled about and said, I suppose so, but really, Miss Green, I don't know. The idea I hate the idea, sort of, you know, people just guzzling in order to give some money for them things. And I said, well, why not give them the BMA diet? And this was the first meal, I think, that was ever done. You know how often it's done
more
now.
On that sort of thing,
yes,
I mean,
that sort
yes.
of thing. That's the first time it was done.
Really?
Beveridge lent us the LSE, and we got a sort of unemployed woman, several children, to say how she couldn't possibly afford this even this meal for her children. How wonderful it was to have it! And everybody came. I mean, archbishops and the peerage, and I had. Had to limit the tickets, of course, and had all sorts of society women ringing me up for tickets. It was terrific. Of course, we got an enormous press for the Children's Nutrition Campaign. I mean, the way we did our press, both the National Union and I learned it very early, is that it's not much good writing to the papers or. What you do is to have an event, any sort of an event. And what the events we organized were to have a deputation to somebody or other. And then the memorandum that we produced used to get published, a column or so in the Times. We really got headlines in those days. And, of course, I did a lot of, I don't know, perhaps it's polite to call it research work, but you know, the paste and scissors
sort of background
research on malnutrition. And the proof of malnutrition, which had to be proved. And that's one example of Eva Hubbock's, well, I don't know which way it goes, but I suppose they were right. I did one, I think the best memorandum I ever wrote, it must have been, was a criticism of the, what do you call the head man at the Ministry of Health?
Permanent Secretary?
Medical Office, Chief Medical Officer then, yes. Chief Medical Officer of his annual report.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which showed that there was no appreciable malnutrition. And I tore this thing piece by piece. I wrote a memorandum about 20 pages. And they sent it to him. I think it was Newsom at the time. And he sent a letter back by hand to Eva Hubbock, asking her not to publish it. And they had a long thing and decided they wouldn't. Which, of course, I felt very fed up about. But they did it from a point of view of, well, we need his cooperation in so many other ways. We didn't need his cooperation with children nutrition, but they did with the National Union.
Of course, yes.
And then, of course, that was a wonderful campaign after family allowances. Oh, and at an early stage, when I just got going, I'd seen the Milk Marketing Board, I got that all fixed up, I'd had this successful meeting in the Commons, we got out our programme, I'd got Lord Hoarder on and all these people. And then I was asked to go to Downing Street, and Eleanor and Mrs. Hubbock said they'd been talking it over and decided that it meant too much work for me, and Elizabeth McAdam would take over the children's nutrition thing. And I think it's the first time in our association that I really...
Because you felt it was really your baby in a way.
Well, it was my baby, and I'd had such a hard struggle with family allowances.
Because when you say it was such a change after family allowances, you mean there was more life in the
campaign? Oh, yes, it was easy. I mean, you were going with the tide. You weren't fighting it all the time.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I'm very sorry that I haven't got the paper for the children's nutrition thing, because it was the most extraordinary list of organisations on it. I mean, we got the support of everybody from the National Council for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children.
Do you really?
All the teachers' organisations.
Yeah.
You know, they sort of revised their rules.
So did you win in the end?
Yes, we got everything.
No, I really meant, did you keep Miss McAdam out?
Well, I was rather surprised. I didn't think I would, but I think I was so obviously shattered.
Yes, I see.
I said, well, I think, you know, I think I said, in that case, I really think I'd like to resign altogether from the whole shoot.
But you see, you've now got three campaigns. I mean, this is really how they work, isn't it?
Yes.
They proliferate little organisations all the time, don't they? You're in the midst of everything. Did they?
Yes, well, Eleanor was in the midst of everything. You see, I was a sort of adjunct almost to Eleanor.
Yes.
And I did the dog's body work for her.
Did they feed each other, these organisations? Did they help each other?
Family allowances. No, the National Council, Equal Citizens, National Council, took up, family allowances were one of their objects, you see.
So they all fertilized each other.
Yes, so that we came in with, they passed the necessary resolution on family allowances. And then when we had an annual series of deputations to ministers from the National Union, and we always brought up a little debate on family allowance in which everyone looked extraordinarily bored, all the permanent secretaries and things, sort of all a waste of time. So.
So really, I mean, because looking at it from your point of view, Eva's using your ideas and putting them under her own name is rather unsatisfactory. But when you look at it from another point of view, she's got a skill which is important.
Yes.
Ideas.
I'm rather sorry I made so much of this because I don't think it worried me a lot at the time.
I mean, if you want to get things done, you do have your eyes open, don't you?
And she used every opportunity. She was wonderful. Mm. I don't know what the word for it is.
For alert.
Yes, and an opportunist. And,
Yes.
That's what she was.
Yes.
Wonderful opportunist.
Was she good at delegating, do you think?
I think so, yes.
Would
I don't
she leave
think
you
she
alone
could have...
to do things?
Oh, yes, she delegated.
Mm.
In fact, I think Eleanor had to be more trained to delegate than...
Did she?
Eva had, yes.
Yes, because you were the sort of person who could have taken a lot off both their shoulders, really, as a graduate, you know.
Yes.
Graduate and so.
Oh, don't. It made me feel like Marcia.
No, but I mean, you were quite a rarity at that time, weren't you? I mean,
no.
as a young graduate prepared to give full time to political activity. I mean,
oh, I don't know. No, I don't think I was.
Anyway, how did it go on then? I mean,
well, then, that was extremely successful.
Yeah.
I don't think any other organisation ever had it, except the trade unions nowadays. We got from the Prime Minister, who at that time was MacDonald.
Oh, yes, yes.
Agreed to receive a deputation with the Cabinet, the relevant members of the Cabinet, Lord Delaware for Agriculture, everybody.
Yes.
And we had a very important deputation. And, you see, it was all party. We didn't bother too much about the Labour Party, but we had what was then known as the Young Men's Christian Association, which was Boothby, Macmillan, a very good chap that was killed in the...
The great and the good, really.
Yes, killed in the... But they were young, you see.
Yes,
Duncan Sands.
Oh, yes, yes.
Was very prominent.
Yes, yes.
And they were rebels. I mean, they made during the time the Tory government was in, as it was during part of it, of course.
Mm.
And we did a lot with the... But we put forward definite schemes and ways in which they could be done, and it was very, very down to earth.
Mm.
But there was always this business about money. And a woman rang me up. By this time, no, sorry, she rang me up. And, of course, half the expense was paid by NU and half by... Family allowances
for
come,
you,
yes,
yes. Mm.
The rent and me and a typist I had then.
In Thames House, you said?
Yes, Thames House, which we got cheap because it was just opened and they couldn't let it on. And then the rents went up. And a woman rang in, an ordinary sort of woman. She'd wanted to help some societies had to do with children, and she'd been round all the societies to do with children in London, and she decided we were doing the most useful work and could she help us. And I said, well, I don't know really. We sometimes send out, you know, circularise a whole House of Commons, and if you could come and do a bit of folding and envelope addressing.
Oh, she wanted to give personal help.
Well, I gathered so, yes. I gathered. Nobody ever offered to give money.
Mm.
So I gathered, so could she come and see us, and I gave her absolutely minute directions of what bus to catch and so on. She didn't seem very interested. And she arrived, Mrs. Burton, very ordinary looking soft woman, might be somebody's, rather plain woman, might be somebody's, you know, nice cook, good cook. And she wanted to know a bit more about it, and I thought it was all very vague, but I really didn't want her very much helping, and I gave her this. Next day, I got a letter with a cheque for £2,000. In those days. Mm-hmm. And she was, let me get this right, Northcliffe's niece, I think, had had a legacy.
Yes.
And she gave us another £1,000 later on. Mm. And I gave up the National Union then. And they got, we changed our office because Thames House got dear, and we went back to a new flat, not in Miss Rathbone's house. Mm. I didn't tell you when I wasn't in Rathbone's house. I was for a time.
No, were you?
Yes.
Mm. You mean between Thames House and...
Between Abingdon Street and Thames House, I think it was.
Mm. Actually in her flat?
Yes, in her house. It was a house.
I see.
And your room. Mm.
Mm. And you had a room there?
Yes, I had a room there.
I see. Mm.
Opened onto the kitchen. Mm. Mrs. Wilson used to bring me cups of tea and cakes every now and then. It was lovely. Very, very quietly, in case Miss McAdams... Miss McAdams there, you know. Not at all dignified. Well, at any rate, that... the National Union, you might be interested to hear, appointed Sybil Wingate.
Oh, yeah.
Who was Orde Wingate's sister.
Mm.
Who was brilliant.
To replace you mean, when they got this money?
Yes, at the National Union. She was supposed to be full-time.
Mm.
Well, I think she did all, you know, I used to slave and spend about 4 hours a day or something on the National Union. She came and sort of did the whole thing in about half an hour and spent the rest of her time phoning up about the war in Spain or something. Most humiliating. She was brilliant.
Could you tell me a bit about the National Union, National Council? I mean, you were actually employed initially by the National Union, were you, as well as the family allowance? Because it changed its name, didn't it, from National Union?
National Council, I think it was then, yes. National Council for Equal Citizenship. I never worked for the National Union. It was the National Council.
I was really wondering how it was different, you know, when it was National Council from when it was National Union.
No, the difference between the National Union and the National Council was that the National Union included what later became the Townsmen's Guild.
Yes.
When it became the... My recollection is, you must get this from Mrs. Horton, my recollection is that when it split into Townswomen's Guilds, it became the National Council.
That's quite right, yes. I just really...
Yes.
But you were only there in the council then.
Yes. Mm. I was now... This is where... I think Ellen was sent. I thought this was it. Oh, no, I know what was from Ellen. This thing said one office girl. I had an office girl on that date, Mrs. Burton.
Yes.
And we had a wonderful voluntary, young voluntary woman who went around and saw people and arranged. That was the Children's Nutrition Council.
Oh, yes,
arranged
yes.
conferences on nutrition in Newcastle and Burton and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
I know what it was, my this. Yes, Family and Down Society, 1939. Oh, did a lot about. I had to study population quite a lot.
Did you?
That's
really?
Where David Garth came in.
I see. Yes.
Because you see, it was an argument one way or the other.
Yes, of course.
Yes. Now, 1934-37, National Council for Equal Citizenship.
Okay, yes.
The National Council for Equal Citizenship interprets its aim very broadly and concerns itself not only with the status of women, but more particularly with matters affecting the welfare of mothers and children.
Mm.
Among women's societies, it's always been distinguished for its parliamentary work. It was quite... outstanding that among women's societies. Oh, yes.
Mm.
No, it led all the, and organised all the parliamentary work and got the other people.
It was a sort of coordinating.
Yes, way, as well it? As, yes. Mm. And it was accepted as they're the people with the know-how about. Mm. I mean, this was Eva Hubbock and Ellen, of course.
Yes.
And when I was there, one thing I did work pretty hard at was, and with Eleanor rather than Eva, was the bill to ensure that women, wives weren't disinherited.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which was finally passed, but not in the form that we'd wanted it. But, you know, we worked session after session at that. It got to the report stage. Mm. Then another time it was talked out. Another time they thought it was going through, and then there was an all-night sitting. You know, you had to go and lobby members to put it down on the private list and so on. Finally it was passed. But that bill was very much Eleanor's own, and I used to go and...
But you stopped working for the council in 1937, then?
Yes.
Well, so did you resume full-time for the family allowance?
Family allowance and children's nutrition. It was nearly all children's nutrition.
Yes, I see. Yes.
You see?
So you've then acquired your third thing by that time, and so
yes.
The pattern is this. Family allowance from 1929 to...
Till the end, 1939. Yes, only not so vigorously towards the end.
Yes. Council from 1933 to 7, was it?
34 to 7, according to this.
And the nutrition, Children's Nutrition Council?
1936 to
39. Yes, I see. So you're really involved in three major organisations. Yes.
I'm just reading this remarkably good application form. <I've written. laughs>
Curriculum vitae.
Yeah.
So you really got a very good training in pressure group activity, really. So where did that lead you to then, after that?
I mean, War Agricultural Committee.
I see. I mean, you gave...
That's the war, yes.
The war already.
I wanted to do something more directly.
Yes. So did you lose contact with Eleanor and Eva after that?
Yes. Well, I wrote... they were awfully busy people, you know.
Mm.
And I was never... I don't know, it was an impersonal relationship in a way.
You were too young then to be on a close...
Yes, I suppose so.
Yes.
But I remember I wrote... when the family allowance, this bill first came up, I wrote from Lancashire a letter to the Guardian protesting that the payment was not to be made to the mothers, which I was very surprised. Nobody else seemed to have pointed it out. And Eleanor was delighted and wrote me a very nice letter.
Yes,
a very nice letter. And they're not sort of people you'd send Christmas cards to exactly, I don't know. I don't know why. And then when I came to Harlow, Eva Hubbard got in touch with me and asked me out, I think.
Did she?
Yes.
Yes.
She was more personal. She was more less impersonal than Eleanor.
Yes. That would fit. How ever did Eva manage Morley College as well as all this?
Oh, she was marvellous. Partly by delegating. She had a wonderful secretary at Morley.
Oh, Miss Cowles.
Miss Cowles, yes. Quite a plain, ordinary sort of little woman, but my goodness, she must have been competent.
And Mr. Cottrell?
Yes. she did awfully well at Morley, you know.
Yes, oh, I believe she did. I mean, this is one of the things she does, really. She has very able people in various departments of her life.
Yes, and they had to be able.
Yeah.
I mean, both she and Eleanor, I think, were fairly ruthless.
Mm.
In, I mean, not personally, but in that way. If they,
in use of
if
time.
If you've fallen down on things.
Yes.
I sometimes had to write testimonials for Eleanor, you know, draft them, she'd probably write them herself, or even for, even ones that I signed, I think I'd show her, you know, people that, an organiser or a typist or something, I don't know, I can't remember in what connection, but I remember showing her one, and my principle in testimonials has always been to say all the nice things and leave out all the others, and that's what I look for when I read them. But oh no, Eleanor, I didn't think that was honest. She sort of
she really told.
She said this is much too good for this. You know, and I read it through and I realised she was right, probably, but she was awfully fair-minded.
Very conscientious.
And conscientious, yes. Scrupulous.
Yes. It's a rather, in a way, an old-fashioned type now.
Oh, very old-fashioned.
Integrity, you don't...
Oh, yes. When I came, I mean, it just was extraordinary working in Harlow after that.
And was it really?
No, I was so naive. Mm. I mean, at the age of 40 or 42 or whatever it was when I came here, I sort of couldn't believe the... You know, my dear, I expect you to be my ears and my eyes and keeping little dossiers on everybody and wanting the lowdown on the other chief officers. And
what, you mean here?
Yes, yes. And the sort
some
of
gossips, you mean gossip and
yes, and intrigue and deviousness.
And you had none of that. In a sense, there's a sort of deviousness in Eleanor and Eva, in the sense that they're very shrewd about how to get things done, aren't
they?
Oh, yes. But not deviousness in personal matters.
Oh, not at all. No. Neither of them. I mean, they'd be. The word that comes to your mind in talking about Eleanor, the first word that ever comes to my mind is integrity. And they had, she had great courage, they both had, and they were both fighters, of course.
What did it matter?
And not little-minded at all, no. About little things.
Did it matter that Eva was a Jew, or born a Jew? I mean, did you notice that? Did you feel, oh, she does this because she's a Jew at all?
No, not a bit.
It wasn't obvious that she
no.
was a Jew?
No. Oh, well, yes. Looking back, in appearance. And
yes.
I think perhaps I know more about Jews now and put yes. things down to her.
Yes.
She, you know, her sort of... this sort of warmth and...
Yes.
Peak... you know, she liked large families and
yes.
family ties and so
yes.
on.
Yes.
But I don't think anyone, I don't think she suffered from it in any way.
Mm.
Of course, they were very... I mean, there's such a difference from being a Jew in cultivated, wealthy...
Oh, yes.
Sort
and
of circles and being
an
East End Jew or even a little sort of greengrocer in Harlow or something. There was no social stigma, at least not among the people. And you see, both of them drew a tremendous lot of their friendships and social life from having been at university in a time when only the really best women went or got into.
How did you notice that? That's interesting. How did you just notice that there was a network? Did you?
Yes, Barbara Hammond. I mentioned.
Yes,
for instance.
Yes. They go.
They
back
kept.
To that.
They kept on. They kept it up.
Yes,
you know.
Interesting.
And a lot of the people that, a lot of those women, of course, were terribly keen on education for women. And, were in the suffrage movement and were in all sorts of movements. Mrs. Rackham.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Rackham, I know.
Yes, well, she was a great friend of Eleanor's.
Yes, she was very interested in penal reform, wasn't she?
Yes, and Marjorie Fry was at college, I think, with Eleanor.
Yeah.
Oh, they were absolutely the... I mean, there was only sort of a couple of colleges or so they could go to, I can't remember now. They really were the elite, the people that were determined to go.
Is all this the thing one needs to imagine oneself back into, of course, now,
yeah.
isn't one? Because it's so common for a woman to go to university
yes.
now that, you know, it's not
yeah.
a big
well,
thing.
Even in my time it was. I've never thought of it as anything very distinguished, but
anything
difficult.
Else about your days, your days with the National Council and the Family Alliance, do you think is important? I mean, apart from what we talked about, we've ranged really widely, really.
I know.
We've covered
well, I expected lots of things, but I can't sort of.
You've done a marvellous job in bringing them to life for me. What do you think? I mean,
she was a very good, the best writer and the best speaker we, the best writer other than Eleanor and the best speaker of anybody
what
on family allowances.
Yes. What did you use her for? What sort of?
Well, any big meeting.
Yes, yes.
And, of course, when I was at the National Union, we had complained of the lack of women representatives on committees.
Mm.
And they put the ball back in our court and said, well, give us some names. And we gave her some names. At the top of the list was Mary Stocks. And Mary Stocks has never been off a committee since that day. Put on everything.
Interesting, yes. But she was a very good speaker because she later was on radio, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a little book of hers which she, I think, I put think of it, it's just occurred to me now. They had academic standards.
Yes.
Because of their background.
Yes. So that they're in a position to convince people in government who are also
yes.
from academic
yes.
backgrounds.
Yes,
yes. Yes, I think that's right.
And of course, I mean, Eleanor, she was so much the old tradition of, you see, a woman with, I mean, the fact that she was successful in her feminism meant there couldn't be any more Eleanor Rathbones, because if Eleanor were alive today, she'd be a top civil servant or a don, or she'd have a full-time job, but there she was, very wealthy.
She's doing her. She's eliminating her own kind.
Yes,
by
yes,
what
she's
doing.
Is. Yes,
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, she's a product of the sort of.
I agree.
But she was very frugal. Well, she lived well, but I don't think she realised probably how well she did live. Miss McCadmus Hall after that, but she was very frugal in several lots of ways.
You mean not extravagant in
no,
dress
she
or
wouldn't,
food or
no
anything like that. Yes. Same with Mary Stocks, too, actually. I saw Lady Stocks about 80 when she died.
Yes.
And that
oh,
was
more,
2 years
surely.
Ago, 80 through 2
Oh, yes, I see, yes, that was some years ago, yes. I've seen
yes.
the difference between
yes.
us was more. And I was told, you know, that she was didn't give a damn about dress or anything. She went looking, sort of never had her hair done, and just sort of very lean and scraggy looking. And this woman said, but you see her at the party. She came to a party in a brilliant scarlet dress. And she had in no time. All the men in the room surrounded her. That's a magnet.
Yeah. Yes, that fits with something I've been told too. I went to see
The Woman's Leader, which you
oh, yes.
mentioned.
Yes.
That was edited by Enid Bach.
Yes. Mm.
Now, Enid Bach was the niece of Mrs. Pankhurst.
Yes. Yes.
And she and I think Miss McCadam had something to do with the Women's Leader. I'm not sure she did. I know Enid knew Miss McCadam fairly well.
Mm.
Mm. But I used to go to tea there sometimes at the Guldenbachs, and I met Sylvia.
Did you really?
Mm.
Did you?
Very unimpressive. By that time, I suppose she was sort of burnt out, but just very ordinary, dull sort of person.
Mm. She was a very brave woman, but I think she must have worn herself out by that time.
Well, she was the one that was in Paris, wasn't she?
Oh, well, then you must have met Christabel.
Christabel, I mean.
Yes.
I knew I'd done it.
Yes.
Oh, no. Sylvia's the one that was in...
Well, there
yeah,
you
she was. In, she was something.
Yes.
But Christabel, I... Yes. But she became a bit of a problem to them, I think.
Oh, I think she did. Well, she became an evangelist, of course,
yes.
she eventually, if that's a problem.
Yes.
I'm to take myself off, but you've been...